Burned out after years of doing development work around the world, William Power spent a season in a 12-foot-by-12-foot cabin off the grid in North Carolina, as recounted in his award-winning memoir, 12-by-12. Well, could he live a similarly minimalist life in the heart of New York City? To find out, Powers and his wife jettisoned 80% of their stuff, left their 2,000-square-foot Queens townhouse, and moved into a 350-square-foot micro-apartment in Greenwich Village. Bill Powers' new book is New Slow City, Living Simply in the World's Fastest City. It's a great pleasure to welcome William Powers to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe. It's great to be here.
So this all came out of an experiment that you did. You wrote about in 12 by 12. So you decide to live in a very small space in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Live off the grid. Okay. Works out. You get a book out of it. All's good. You move to Queens. You're in a townhouse. And then you say, okay, but what if I move into a micro apartment in Greenwich Village?
Exactly.
You get rid of 80% of your stuff. What goes into that decision?
Well, it was partially living off the grid in North Carolina in this 12-foot-by-12-foot house. Some of my readers in this area will know the book 12-by-12. It's about that experience. And what I realized is that less is more, and that often simplifying your life brings a lot more happiness and joy, and it also lowers your ecological footprint, and it connects you more to your family, to your friends, to community, that type of an idea. So, of course, that was one thing by the banks of No Name Creek in a permaculture orchard in North Carolina. It's quite another thing in Queens. So,
yes. So you decide to take on this apartment, and what does that allow you?
Well, we were able to jettison 80% of our stuff, mostly through garage sales, giving it away, that type of thing. And then it allowed us to kind of focus on what are the things that really bring us pleasure. And you can even do that in your own home. Like if you look at your life and you feel like you're over-cluttered with stuff, you can look at each object and say, does this give me pleasure and enjoyment? Not just utility, but pleasure. So that's part of what we did. And I think that moving from 2,000 square feet to 340 square feet really forces you to figure out what those key things are. And that was a beautiful process for us. We ended up sort of thinking of our apartment as a ship, something like that, like being on a houseboat. And where's the place for everything? So suddenly all the clutter was gone from our lives and everything has its place. There's never a mess. There's a lot less housework, obviously, a lot less cleaning, and just more time to kind of enjoy the city, whether it's Albany or DC or where we were living in New York, because you're not just in your apartment all the time. You're actually thinking of the entire city as your sort of backyard and your community.
So for everyone who's saying to the radio right now, well, all apartments in New York City are small. 350 square feet, that's a very small space.
Right. If you can picture like someone who's 6 foot tall, right? So right. They lay down on the ground, two of them by two. That's 12 by 12. So our apartment was basically like two 12 by 12s put together in the middle of the city.
Yeah.
So, you know, you basically could barely close the bathroom door, you know. The kitchen only had, I think, 6 inches of counter space in it. You know, so you have to balance the cutting board between the stove and the refrigerator, those types of things. So at first, it takes a lot of getting used to.
The thing I kept coming back to in reading the book was, and you discuss this, but, you know, you're living with someone else. You know, it's a relationship question just as much as it is an environmental one.
Right. So my wife and I called it our little ballet at first, as we kind of like sort of danced around each other in this tiny apartment. But then we started realizing we were actually, you know, mosh pit dancing, bumping into each other, bruising shins. At one point she shouted out, I just hate Bloomberg's micro apartment initiative. Why did we get involved in this? But, you know, it was over time that we began to whittle down our stuff to just the right amount. And in some ways, our joy and pleasure grew in proportion to what was shed and left behind.
And you shed it forever?
Pretty much. You know, most of it was we got rid of. We do have a small amount in storage, but very, very small amount right now. And yeah, you know, like, I think in terms of like memorabilia and things that you think you definitely need. I mean, what about just picking the real key things? You know, the key things, like a couple of important things from your childhood and not just holding on to everything. Or if it's like books or papers or documents from, I don't know, school, you can scan certain things and have them electronically there. Photos are now electronic. All of those things. So these are just ways to sort of simplify all the clutter.
So you do this for what reason? The goal is to accomplish what?
Well, okay, there's three things. One is to liberate time, because if you are spending less on rent, you have more money and therefore can pay yourself in time instead of just money and like free up more time. The second is just eliminating the stress that goes from over-cluttered environments and having to always be managing all the stuff that you have. And the third thing is the environmental impact, because, you know, the more simply you're living, the more in harmony you are with the planet. I guess you know that UN scientists have pointed out that if everyone lived at the average American level of consumption, we'd need five planets of resources, and we only have one at this point.
Right.
So those are the three reasons.
So when it comes to what you are able to do and how you live your life, do you find that it changed drastically, or in comparison to the 12 by 12, that it was just another adaptation?
In some ways, we were riffing on the idea of the 12 by 12 and how to bring that kind of radical simplicity and mindfulness to a big city, because, you know, it's pretty much the same idea. One of the great things we discovered was the rooftop right above our apartments. Mm-hmm. That just expanded our square footage just by going up on this, what we called Tar Beach. It wasn't any fancy roof deck, but you can go up there. And we watched the little pigeons being born on the fire escape across the way, and migrating birds would come through. And we'd actually have coffee or meals just up there on this rooftop, which was awesome. And then what we called urban sanctuaries, we started to discover, like, you know, Pier 45, on the Hudson River, where you can't even hear the West Side Highway anymore, or, you know, the Ramble in Central Park. There are spaces like this in Albany and Schenectady and around here too, obviously even in much more abundance. So just touching base every single day with one of those spaces. We also realized that by living at the third story, as we called it, you know, we're kind of, instead of just always focusing on street level, everyone like on their smartphones and the sample sales and all the happy hour come-ons and everything, you just look up a little bit sometimes, look at the clouds, look at the trees, kind of just tune into the environment that you're in.
You also went to a two-day-a-week work week.
I did. So part of simplifying our lives was simplifying our calendars, because I'm sure a lot of your listeners find that, you know, in 2014, we're constantly overscheduled. We have a lot to do. Productivity of labor since 1970 has gone up by four times. So we're four times more productive, and yet working hours has gone up significantly in that time. And Americans, we are overworked. All the polls show it. Some 70% of Americans say they're just dissatisfied with work. They're overworked. It's leading to stress, really high stress levels. In Japan, they have a word for this. It's called karoshi. Do you know what karoshi means?
No.
It's people who actually literally die from overwork.
Really?
You know, and I think in some ways we're kind of tipping towards that if you look at some of the studies that are coming out. So why is it that the world's richest country, ours, why do we work 9 weeks on average more than our average like European counterparts, 350 hours a week? And it's just something that I realized that I have to change this. So, of course, going from, you know, working 60-hour weeks, which I was, or 50 hours, to a two-day work week was a big step. But I was trying to kind of like shake it up a little bit and do something a lot different.
You do get the sense in the book of how it changes almost every aspect of your life. Like how do you celebrate? The celebration of holidays is different, right?
That's right. So we were doing a no-buy Christmas, you know, where we don't really buy new gifts. Instead, make things for family or, you know, get something used, basically.
Yeah. Would you decorate for the holidays?
We did some small decorations, but, you know, with a 340-square-foot micro-apartment, it's not much. You can do a small bush.
Putting up a card would be nice, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, and then you know, that same type of an idea for around kids and parenting and trying to see how creative you can get with not just overloading yourself with a bunch of stuff for your child, but keeping it in proportion.
You come off in telling the story that
you're advocating for it. I mean, it doesn't seem like, oh, this is my story. We tried this and it was horrible. No, you seem like it was a genuinely pleasurable experience. You got a lot out of it, and that you're an advocate for people doing this.
I am, and I think the book, you know, New Slow City, it's supposed to be it's a takeoff on New York City,
right?
And the idea that even a city can be slow. And you can be slow. And I don't mean slow in a Luddite type of a way of rejecting technologies and rejecting modern life. Not at all. Slow is self-paced. It's being able to choose the pace that you're at and not being sort of pressured by others. It's like taking back your time, finding ways to just feel more joyful and good intrinsically. Because all the studies show, you know, that happiness is intrinsic. It's not extrinsic. So it's like what we can find from within.
Do you still live in a 350 square foot apartment?
Well, actually, we, after 5 years in New York City, we moved to Bolivia recently. And my wife and I and our daughter live on a 5-acre permaculture, you know, farm down there in Bolivia. And I'm teaching down there, bringing American students down and other activities. And so, you know, it wasn't to say that you have to do it your whole life. We were just trying to point out for our experiment in New York, that you can bring these principles into the world's fastest city.
In Bolivia, do you feel, is there a freedom that you have that you didn't have in New York City?
I believe that if you can get even more in contact with nature and a little bit outside of the cultural grid that we've grown up in, you absolutely do have more freedom. You know, because we're not subject to the same kind of family pressures and societal pressures and so on that as we are here, because we're out of our cultural matrix. And it does allow a lot more creativity and freedom and all of that. So I think in some ways, I'm also an advocate for traveling and for leaving the culture for a while, even if you love it here and so on. It just opens your mind very much to do this type of a thing. So we just thought also for our daughter, you know, growing up sort of bilingual for a few years, other aspects like that.
Do you see yourself with any permanence in the sense of living in one place for an extended period of time? Is that in your DNA?
Well, I do believe in theory very much in, you know, centering and settling down and being in one place. And I like that. But then again, life is short. So we tend to experiment with all different ways of living, you know, to sort of get the most out of it, try to live as many lives as you can. So, you know, I've lived, as you know, around the world in Liberia. I worked in West Africa as a conservation and aid worker. I worked in Bolivia for many years and around the globe. And, you know, I certainly love New York. And I see that because I'm a third generation New Yorker. We still have our place there that's currently rented out. And, you know, we definitely feel very connected to this part of the world. So I don't know if that answers your question.
So you may come back and may settle down.
That's possible. Yeah, it's just we try to leave it open. We also have a kind of philosophy of not imposing any one sort of rigid dogma about how to live, you know, so it's about creativity and about sort of spontaneity.
Do you think that what you are doing will always be an extreme to most people, or that it will, because it has to, become a norm?
Well, you know, there's nothing really that extreme about what we're doing. I think, you know, I think what's extreme in some ways is, you know, consuming at a level that takes up 5 planets of resources, or overworking to the point where you're stressed out and on antidepressants and just not feeling good. This type of a culture is based purely on economics. It's based purely on like the system of just growth for growth's sake, and not creating a society and culture around happiness. And that's what we should be doing, is looking at how do we create well-being, emotional and social well-being in the society. Of course, that has lots of different aspects. I mean, one is redistribution. We have really gross inequalities in this country right now. So ways of finding a way to redistribute income in ways that, you know, are fair and just. You know, and the other is work-life balance policies. You know, we have the worst policies in terms of maternity leave, in terms of paid vacations, time off. Anywhere in the Western world, we need to change that calculus. So I think what we're trying to do is, I was in an event last week with Colin Bevan, who did No Impact Man, mm-hmm. and he kind of like was the interlocutor with me at this Brooklyn event. And he said, like, Bill, what you've been doing is sort of life hacking with soul. Like you're doing, it's like, because he loves New Slow City. And he just says that he just thinks that we're, you know, like playing with our own lives, almost like an artist, creatively experimenting with what edges can you push. And it brings you so much pleasure to do that because you're doing something different. And also you're trying to find new ways that maybe others can begin to learn from and model off of.
So point taken on the living the way that, most people live, being extreme. However, to reframe the question, do you think you will see more and more people saying, you know what, I'm going to get rid of 80% of my stuff, I'm going to live in a micro apartment, and I'm going to downsize for the reasons that you point out in the mm-hmm. book?
I think it's part of this great turning that we're in. You know, we're kind of going out of the age of like sort of overconsumption and too much and fast, the age of fast and more.
Yes.
And in some ways, we're passing into the age of a period of people really like becoming conscious of this. And you see it everywhere with all the environmental consciousness, with all the slow food chapters, even the Saratoga slow food chapter around here. And there's 2 million different sort of community groups, NGOs, this budding movement that Paul Hawkins talks about, almost like a new organism that's spreading these new ideas. So I think this, what we're doing, is part of that larger social movement, and we're connected with a lot of people doing this in different ways. But I'm not giving a blueprint that you have to go and move from your big house to a tiny apartment. I'm just saying that this is one way. And like with my book 12x12, you know, people would say, oh, that's not realistic, you know, moving into a 12x12 house with no electricity and running water, come on. But I would say, well, what's your 12x12? You know, what is it that in this age of crisis and also of vast opportunities, what can you do for the twin goals of having a lighter ecological footprint and having more joy in your life?
The name of the book is New Slow City, Living Simply in the World's Fastest City. William Powers, thank you very much for being with us and sharing with us this morning. It's a great pleasure.
It's been a real pleasure, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. Again, Bill Powers is the author of the new book, New Slow City. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.